evam. Thus,
kripanaya, by miserly, buddhya, intelligence. So chantam, lamenting. Atat arhanam, in which he should not have lamented. Grahetum, in order to arrest. Kritadehi, the determined king of the Yavanas. Enam, him. Moyanama, whose name was fear. Avyapadyata, came there immediately. So translation, although King Paranjana should not have lamented over the fate of his wife and children, he nonetheless did so due to his miserly intelligence. In the meantime, Yavanaraj, whose name was fear itself, immediately drew near to arrest him. So you can repeat. Although King Paranjana should not have lamented over the fate of his wife and children, he nonetheless did so due to his miserly intelligence. In the meantime, Yavanaraj, whose name was fear itself, immediately drew near to arrest him. So purport by his divine grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. Foolish people do not know that every individual soul is responsible for his own actions and reactions in life. As long as a living entity in the form of a child or boy is innocent, it is the duty of a father and mother to lead him into a proper understanding of the values of life. When a child is grown, it should be left up to him to execute the duties of life properly. The parent, after his death, cannot help his child. A father may leave some estate for his children's immediate help, but he should not be overly absorbed in thoughts of how his family will survive after his death. This is the disease of the conditioned soul. Not only does he commit sinful activities for his own sense gratification, but he accumulates great wealth to leave behind so that his children may also gorgeously arrange for sense gratification. It's nice. In any case, everyone is afraid of death, and therefore death is called bhaya or fear. Although King Paranjana was engaged in thinking of his wife and children, death did not wait for him. Death does not wait for any man. It will immediately carry out its duty. Since death must take away the living entity without hesitation, it is the ultimate God realization of the atheists, who spoil their lives thinking of country, society, and relatives to the neglect of God consciousness. In this verse, the word atad arhanam is very significant, for it means that one should not be overly engaged in welfare activities for one's family members, countrymen, society, and community. None of these will help a person to advance spiritually. Unfortunately, in present-day society, so-called educated men have no idea what spiritual progress is. Although they have the opportunity in the human form of life to make spiritual progress, they remain misers. They use their lives improperly and simply waste them thinking about the material welfare of their relatives, countrymen, society, and so on. One's actual duty is to learn how to conquer death. Lord Krishna states the process of conquering death in the Bhagavad Gita in the 4th chapter, text 9. Janma karma chami divyam evam yo viti tapvataha chakva deham punajanma. Naiti mam eti sorjuna. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. After giving up this body, one who is fully Krishna conscious does not accept another material body but returns home back to Godhead. Everyone should try to attain this perfection. Unfortunately, instead of doing so, people are absorbed in thoughts of society, friendship, love, and relatives. This Krishna consciousness movement, however, is educating people throughout the world and informing them how to conquer death. Harim vina nasrutim taranti. One cannot conquer death without taking shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So evam kripaneha buddha shochantam matirarhanam rahitam kritadirenam vayanama vipadyata. So om ganatya madandasya gananjana shlakaya chakshur and meditam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. So this verse in purport reminds me of the various ways that people who are not Krishna conscious, what we call demons, but let's say spiritually challenged individuals, to be more politically correct, that how they attempt to surmount insurmountable death. And one, there's many stories, but one story that comes to mind is the story of Ravana. Ravana basically means, his name means he who makes people cry. That's interesting. So, of course, we know that Ravana performed austerities, and finally Lord Brahma appeared, and he asked for immunity from demigods, sages, and higher living entities like that, but he neglected to ask for immunity from human beings and animals, because he thought they're too puny. But that's not the story I'm going to tell. The story I'm going to tell is where he actually attempted to fight with Yamaraj, who was basically death personified. You know, Yamaraj. It's interesting, the name Yamaraj. Raj, of course, means king. That's why it's good to be a sannyasi, because you become a big king. Maharaj, right? That's why. Anyway, that title for sannyasi is just a recent title. They did not call sannyasis Maharaj 5,000 years ago, because it means big passion. So anyway, just a little. Yeah, I mean, if it was a king's name, like Maharaj Prataparuja, Maharaj Ambarish, Maharaj, great passion, great king. Anyway, so Yama Raj means the king of the restrictions. That's literally. Yam, niyam, just like you have in the Eightfold Process of Yoga. What is it? Yam, niyam, asana, pranayam, pratyahara, dharana, jhana, and samadhi, right? So the first thing is restrictions. And if you don't follow the restrictions, then you get to visit Yamaraj. Okay. So our friend Ravana, he thought, you know, if I can conquer Yamaraj, the king of restrictions, then I will have conquered death. You know, see, throughout the Ramayana, he's actually bragging like that. He said, I have conquered death. I have conquered death personified, which is what's mentioned here. He just like keeps bragging that. You know, who can touch me? So what happened is that he went to Yamaloka. And on Yamaloka, it's described in the Ramayana, he saw people were being punished. And you find in the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam so many descriptions of these punishments, like being put through a sugarcane press over and over again, or if you're really romantic and follow the example of Bollywood films, you have to embrace the red-hot form of the opposite sex, the white-hot, you know, just... I don't know if any of you ever burnt yourself. You know, sometimes we're cooking, we touch something, you go, like that. Isn't it? You ever have that happen to you? You know, your pot, you forget it's hot or something like that. But you can imagine with a full body embrace. Naked. So, it's pretty intense. So Yamaraj has this punishment like that. You know, people are so much into these romantic... I was actually thinking, just as a side note, how this Bollywood romance type thing, or Hollywood, Bollywood romance, is destroying marriages all over the place. Because it gives people the conception that marriage should be based upon some phantasmagoria type of romantic relationship. And when their particular marriage doesn't meet up to that expectation, then they're thinking, you know, I got the wrong person. And so let me get divorced. And so I see that, you know, with people. People who watch these films more than anything else, they're really into romance. And just like I see people watch films about superheroes, they're into just like being some sort of hero, you know, like being prominent hero. They want attention more than anyone else, isn't it? It's just like, huh? Anyway, so, or people watch video games, they become more violent, like that. So anyway, let's get back to the story. So he saw all these people being punished for various reasons. You know, people just like, the vultures of hell were plucking people's eyes out, and another people were walking up the hill with a stone, pushing a stone, like that in the Greek mythology, that Sisyphus, isn't it? He goes to Hades. Hades is like the Greek equivalent of Yamaraj's abode. You ever heard of that before? Hades? Hades. If you ever study Greek mythology, it's very similar to the demigods in the Vedic conception. So anyway, so he sees all these things and he thinks, I'm going to help these people. You know, so he's thinking in a charitable way. Just like sometimes we think. I mean, this example is very good, like to illustrate what Prabhupada is talking about here. How we think we're going to alleviate people's suffering through material means, or even gross material means. Let's say gross material means. Whereas the suffering is actually due to their karma and their mentality, too. You know, they're attached to something. Someone is very attached. The attachment begins, of course, with the body and the mind. And that's why you suffer from the body. If you're not attached, and that, someone asked the question the other day in the Sunday feast, how can being free from attachment free us from suffering simultaneously? And I gave the example that someone who is hears a car being smashed in the parking lot, and he's not attached because it's not his car. It doesn't cause any pain. But when it's his car, he identifies with it, causes pain. Right? So the attachment leads like that. So anyway, so but Ravana, he tried to be like a very nice, you know, UNESCO representative. I don't know if you know UNESCO is, or UNICEF representative. That means charitable activities. He actually, you know, he wasn't just such a bad guy as people make him out to be. You know, he had this thing with women, which is all right. You know, he's a little romantic. You know, kidnapping women all over the place. But the women liked it. It was like, he was like the original Bollywood film hero. Because even if he kidnapped your wife, I mean, your wife would complain in the beginning, you know, honey, he's taking me away. But after she saw what she would get, you know, a palace and all the opulence, she said, you know, forget about that creep I used to be married to. Because because many men and women, they're fickle like that. You understand fickleness? Ravana was also thinking, you can tell I'm reading the Ramayana. But anyway, so Ravana was also thinking that Sita would be fickle like that, because that was his experience with women before. He thought, you know, as soon as Rama is dead and she sees that there's no question of happiness with him anymore, you know, she's going to just embrace me and be happy with me, you know. Because women are like that. He was thinking like that. That was his consciousness. That's what the Ramayana says. He didn't understand she was chaste, and if Rama actually had left this world, she was going to leave the world too. He didn't have that conception. So he was, Ravana was thinking very charitably, and this mundane charity, thinking you can really help someone, is a great illusion. Prabhupada actually spoke against this. You know, you talk about opening hospitals and everything like that. Oh, it's a great illusion thinking you're helping people like that. And Of course, if you give them Krishna consciousness at the same time, that's a different thing. Like at our Bhaktivedanta hospital, I mean, there's a deity of Prabhupada in there, and they're playing Hare Krishna over the loudspeaker system all the time. I mean, that's a little bit different. Or if you're serving the residents of the holy dham, like Vrindavan and Mayapur, I mean, these are all great personalities. You're doing Vaishnava Seva. Even if they're Muslims or untouchables, Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about this, you know, about even taking the dust of the feet of the untouchables, or the people, lower class people there, because all the residents. So that sort of charity is different. I want to distinguish that. Although sometimes people connect that, you know, some people get very angry at ISKCON's charitable activities like Food for Life and everything like that. There's one sannyasi who calls Food for Life Food for Death, you know, because he considers that to be against Prabhupada's. But actually, we're giving them prasadam. You understand? The very heavy sannyasi. I won't mention his name. Anyway, not heavy physically. He's heavy, heavy, you know, with his mouth. So, but it's not like that. I mean, prasadam is another thing. You distribute prasadam, and people get spiritual benefits. So that's all right to do charitable activity, distributing prasadam. But if you're just distributing vegetarian food, you're not helping the people. Or if you just give them medical care without Krishna consciousness, you're not helping the people. I mean, just like yesterday, I was at the eye doctor. I was thinking, you know, if this eye doctor, nice lady, helps people like have good sight, what are they going to use the sight for? Right? Like if you cure people's cataracts and they go and watch pornography or, you know, watch football games, what's the use of that? It doesn't really help them at all. So Ravana was thinking, in a mundane way, he became very charitable. He freed all these people from the punishments of hell. That's what the Ramayana describes. This is a very interesting chapter in the Ramayana. He went there and he thought, you know, I'm so powerful, I can defeat death, so let me help these other people too. So he took the Yamadutas who were punishing the sinful people, and he sort of like tied them up. It's like someone going into the prison house and tying up all the wardens and the jailers and things like that and letting the prisoners have a party. So he was doing that. And they were all just like joyful, you know, Jai Ravana, Jai Ravana, Jai Ravana, 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 our Savior. You know, people like think like that about charitable people. And then so Ravana thought, you know, this is good. You know, I've actually surmounted, helped people surmount the insurmountable. And so then he came across Yamaraj. And he said, Yamaraj, you're death personified. So let's have a fight. And so he proceeded to fight Yamaraj. And they were firing all these weapons at each other. You know, there's an elaborate description in the Ramayana, the Valmiki Ramayana, of the different weapons they were firing at each other. And eventually, you know, Ravana was very powerful. So eventually Yamaraj thought, you know, enough playing with this guy. I'm just, you know, just going to fire my ultimate weapon, the weapon of death, which, you know, has the ropes of Varuna in it. And, you know, he's finished. He's finished. You know, Yamaraj was thinking, this is, you know, it was an interesting encounter. I don't get many people come to challenge me. Must be a pretty thankless task. You know, you don't get many guests. You know, guests, you understand, guests? I mean, your family really doesn't want to visit you if you're in charge of hell. So he said, all right, it was interesting while it lasted, so he pulled out his ultimate noose of death, and he got ready to fire it or shoot it or whatever they do at Ravana. And suddenly Lord Brahma said to him, I've given him a benediction. And the benediction is that he can't be killed by demigods. And guess what, Yamaraj? You're a demigod. So if you don't uphold my benediction, there's going to be destruction in the universe. Because that's a universal order. You find this continually in the descriptions of the itihasas, the histories. that when a great personality like Lord Brahma gives a benediction, that benediction has to be upheld. Even though, you know, devotees could surmount that benediction because they're, you know, they have that spiritual power, or the sages could surmount the benediction, still they respect it. They respect it. Just like Lord Krishna, when he took the form of Lord Nrsimhadev, he respected the benediction that Lord Brahma gave that Hiranyakashipu couldn't be killed inside, outside, day or night, by man or beast. You know, so that's respecting the order. You know, when you go into someone's territory, you actually respect the rules that they made. Or else it creates complete havoc, especially in the universe. So Lord Brahma said to Yamaraj, you know, just, I gave him the benediction, so please don't kill him. And so Yamaraj just disappeared. But Ravana, he was thinking that I have conquered death personified. And from that point onwards, you find him in the Ramayana, you find him bragging about conquering death personified. I have conquered death. And he becomes so proud. See, that's really what happens when you get into this materialistic consciousness like these atheists. They become so proud because they think by their material adjustments they can conquer death or they can be happy or whatever. Like we have it right now, of course, is the propaganda about modern science. I remember, let's say about 40, 50 years ago, before any of you were born, there was this whole propaganda that modern science is going to conquer every disease, but they haven't yet conquered many of the diseases. So if you really want to wait until they can conquer whatever disease you have, you should have yourself frozen. That's called cryogenics. I don't know if you've heard of cryogenics before. Any of you know that word? That's a big word. Cryogenics is basically very, very cold things, like, you know, liquid nitrogen. When I was in high school, we had someone who was expert in cryogenics come and do a demonstration for us. He took a flower, rose, and he put it into liquid nitrogen or something like that. He pulled it out, and it cracked like a... You ever seen that? Some of you might have seen that. It cracked like, it was like glass. It was brittle like glass. Because it can freeze someone. You have to freeze something immediately. So many people had themselves frozen because they thought that way they will conquer death. In fact, there's one famous person, Walt Disney, who had himself frozen. I'm not sure if he got defrosted yet. Prabhupada even said, as far as vegetables, when you freeze vegetables, it spoils it anyway. It's nasty. Prabhupada said that, frozen vegetables. Anyway. I know we use this sometimes because it's practical, but Prabhupada said it was nasty. I mean, fresh things are much nicer. Like if you go to India, you buy into the marketplace and everything is fresh, you know, grown fresh. Not everything, but many things are grown fresh. And the spinach tastes better. You know, in America we have this thing called baby spinach, which is, you know, a complete concoction. And, you know, it's because everyone likes this cute little looking food, isn't it? Isn't it? They like a cute look. You know, little cute little, whatever you call it, leaves. Cute little leaves, you know, just like, you know, or the baby carrots, which are just simply the garbage that they shaped into carrots. So, anyway, so getting back to the point is that people thought they would live longer or be cured ultimately of their diseases if they were frozen. And later, I think Walt Disney got defrosted by accident, if I remember correctly. And then he was finished. So, what is that called? Suspended animation. But it doesn't work. And, of course, nowadays they have so many procedures where you can get different body parts, transplants. I'm not saying, you know, sometimes if a devotee can do it and live longer, it's all right. You know, but it's so much endeavor and so expensive. I mean, it's super expensive. Isn't it? to, like, if you, and then, transplanted this organ, that organ, and then they're trying to discover methods of growing the organs using stem cells. You know, they're cultivating kidneys in the laboratory. Now, I'm not decrying those activities, but the consciousness behind them. I mean, I'm not saying that we shouldn't do those things. I'm not saying, because obviously these things can help devotees or help people engage in spiritual life and live longer. I mean, many devotees have had stents put in, which is fine. But the consciousness behind that is that there's a bright tomorrow. And then ultimately, we are going to be able to conquer over death. Ultimately, you will live for 300 or 400 or 500 years. I mean, who would want to live? One time there was a devotee who put on a play interviewing people, as part of a Sunday, interviewing people who would live several hundred years. And it was a really funny play. I mean, because the people, what would you do for several hundred years unless you were Krishna conscious? I mean, if you could live for a long time, it'd be pretty boring. I mean, what are you going to do, play video games for the next 10,000 years? People are already miserable. So it just increases the misery. I mean, the whole point is to become happy, to live, and to have knowledge. That's really what people are looking for. Eternity, bliss, and knowledge. To live longer, but to live longer being happy, and to live longer having full knowledge. Full strength of your brain and intelligence. So anyway, so there's so much endeavor to conquer death in modern society, and that's generally a demoniac type of consciousness that we find in the Vedic literature, that they're always making some plans to conquer death. Whereas the sages, they're just looking for the right moment to leave their bodies. And, they're just like you have that one lady, Shabari in the Ramayana. Shabari means a lady born in a pig-eating caste, anyway. But she was a great devotee. Who was her guru's name? Starts with an M. I forget her guru's name. Something Rishi. Anyway, so her guru went back to Godhead, and she wanted to go with him. She wanted to leave. But her guru said to her that you should stay around to greet Sri Ram when he comes. So she was, isn't that an interesting story? She gave Sri Ram these fruits and she tasted them first. And so she waited till Sri Ram came. She was decorating such devotion. She was decorating the path every day for years and years with flowers in case Sri Ram would come that particular day. That's real devotion. And so she was decorating the path. And finally Sri Ram came. And right after Sri Ram came, she said, I want to go join my guru. Goodbye. And then she left her body. So devotees, sages, transcendentalists, they're not in anxiety about this death. They see it as a natural thing. Of course, Bhagavad Gita says, wherever there's death, birth is certain. Wherever there's birth, death is certain. So one should execute his duties. So if we're actually Krishna conscious, we'll be free from this bhaya, just like it's mentioned here. Yavanaraj, whose name was fear itself, and one of the qualities of a pure devotee is abhaya, like we find that Srila Prabhupada's name, abhaya chandanada vinda. Because we have faith, that's the point. And I was thinking about that too, how little faith we have. I was thinking about that this morning when I was chanting japa. How little faith, because we actually had faith that Krishna was there in his holy names, our mind would not deviate. At least my mind wouldn't deviate. I would just like, because if I had faith, 100% faith that Krishna was there in his holy names, and Krishna's the wish fulfilling touchstone or whatever it is, Dhyama Chintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha, if I had faith in those words, and then, I would be attentive in asking Krishna for something my whole japa period. Not necessarily money, but, pure devotional service, eternal residence in the holy dham, I'd be just like focused like anything. But because of that lack of faith, shradana putasha dharma shasha parantapa prapyamam nivartanti ruchu samsara vartmani, as Krishna says in the Gita. Because we don't have that faith, and don't have that trust, don't have that implicit conviction, then our japa is not very focused and we're feeling fear and trepidation in different circumstances. Not only because of death, I mean, there's also so many fearful things. You know, what if there's not enough money? You know, just like sometimes I go to the temple checkbook and I become fearful, see all the checks that they made out. Like that. You know, that's, because that's in my blood. Anyway, so because of that, we don't have this faith that Krishna's maintaining us, Krishna's protecting us. The holy names are everything. There's so many things we need to have faith in, and we don't have faith in any of those. Or we have little faith. I'm sorry, it's not that we don't have any faith. We have little faith in these things. And Krishna says, for the doubting soul, there's happiness neither in this life nor in the next. Interesting, isn't it? For the doubting soul, there's happiness neither in this life or in the next. So that doubt causes us distress. And that doubt causes us fear, you know, which is mentioned here. But when there's full faith and death comes, you know, all right, see you later. You say goodbye to your family. It's like waving goodbye when you're getting on the plane, right? But some people are so afraid, with a fear of flying, like they start shaking in the plane. So... Anyway, so it's just so. How do we? So the question is, how do we increase this faith? And that's by associating with devotees who have that full faith. Faith, as described in the Bible, faith can move mountains, right? Right, faith can move mountains. In other words, by that implicit faith or trust in Krishna, and the process of Krishna consciousness and the pure devotees, then. Everything, all problems are solved. Shraddha Shabde Vishasakehe Sudrida Nishtya. Anyway, so this is one of the points. So any questions or comments? We have about 2 minutes. We ended early today. Yeah.
Knew where she was going, and at the same time she was, you know, reciprocating with her family and came to say goodbye, just like, well, I'm going now and I'll, you know, see you in the future. And it really, when I saw that in her, and it really amazed me. And, you know, here she was, like in this, you know, condition, and then when she saw me, she was just smiling and said so many encouraging words. And so when we see devotees like that, that are getting ready to leave their body and they're so Krishna conscious and so fixed, that's like such an inspiration.
Yeah, like Nirguna too.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, we had a lot of, like Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, so many examples we have nowadays. And unfortunately, we'll have more examples as life goes on or time goes on. But, you know, these are showing the devotee is fearless. You know, someone who actually has the faith. So that's the test of faith, whether you actually believe it, that it's, you know, you actually believe that Krishna is there. Or it's just like, it's just something you did, some club you joined during this lifetime. So, any other questions? Yeah.
What about fear? Like, some people say, I'm afraid of this person. So, is that a fear of death?
No, it's not a fear of death, but it's, you know, sometimes we have different needs, emotional needs and everything like that. So, it's not the same thing. I'm afraid of some people, too.
So how do we get cured of that?
How do we cure to that? Stay away, maybe. I don't know. You know, that, yeah. Anyway, we don't. Let's just take shelter in Krishna, and then everything's taken care of. Maharaj Ambarish. Yeah. Yeah, he wasn't afraid of Durvasa. He was surrendered to Krishna. But we should be afraid of Maya. We should be afraid. You know, we have certain needs. I wouldn't say it's fear so much, but we sometimes we can make some adjustment to put ourselves in a peaceful situation so we can think of Krishna consciousness. You know, so we have some material needs. That's not fear exactly. Like I have certain needs, like I need to keep this coat to keep myself free from the cold. I'm not afraid of the cold per se. Probably I'd be afraid of shivering, but anyway.